Argument is Crowley versus McKinney. Mr. Busby.
May it please the court. I'd like to begin with the first question this court asked when appointing amicus, and that's whether a parent's fundamental liberty interest in participating in the upbringing and education of his or her children is limited or eliminated by a divorce decree that awards custody to the other parent. The answer to that question is no.
But I don't think that's the question. I think the question is, what rights did the father waive when he... agreed to the divorce decree?
Well, Your Honor,
it seems to me you have to look at the divorce decree.
I agree that's the place.
And this divorce decree says the wife shall have the sole care, custody, control, and education of the minor children. And it further agrees to make no plans or arrangements that will impinge upon the other's authority.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. In addition to that, and what Illinois law says about a custody
order... I don't know what's in addition to that. Why isn't that perfectly clear? What I don't understand about your case, what's a school supposed to do? When a school gets caught in the middle of a fight between the parents, what's it supposed to do? It seems to me that if the father thinks he has rights which the wife is not recognizing... She won't show him the children's report cards or something like that. It seems to me his remedy is either to go to the divorce court or perhaps, you know, waive the divorce decree in front of the principal or something like that. But it seems to me the starting point has to be the divorce decree.
I agree, Your Honor, that the divorce decree is the starting point, but I respectfully disagree with what the issue is in this case. There's no evidence and there's been no pleading. We're on the pleadings here. There's been no pleading or allegations by either side that there's a dispute between Mr. Crowley and his ex-wife, the mother of the children. Under the divorce decree, she doesn't have any obligation to give him these things. He has to get them from the school. If you look at paragraphs 2.7 and 2.8 of the decree, it says each shall direct the school to send duplicate notice of all records, events, and issues concerning the children. Neither shall be responsible to inform the other.
This is the one, too, that says Sandra and Daniel shall have joint and equal rights of access to records that are maintained by third parties. That's 2.7.
Yes, Judge Wynn, that's correct.
So in the divorce decree, despite the earlier language, there's also more specific language about these school records.
That's
in
correct.
Which he did not waive his
rights. That's correct. And there's also language saying that each parent agrees to cooperate with the other in establishing mutually acceptable guidelines and standards for the children's education.
So he also doesn't delegate full control to her in that respect.
No, absolutely not. And one of the things that Mr. Crowley is most concerned about, we've alleged a comprehensive denial of his rights here, but one of the things that he hasn't been getting...
What are his rights?
Well, his rights...
The records.
His rights, Judge Posner, are that the cases, both federal and state cases, say that non-custodial parents retain the narrow and well-accepted right.
No, we're talking about what the divorce...
But in 2.8, doesn't it go beyond simply records to say that he has the right to be advised of all school meetings, functions, and activities that are open to attendance by parents? So hasn't he also retained the right I would suppose that we're talking about a set of rights that you're trying to talk about, which is whatever the background rules are, and then the divorce decree modifies them somehow. It
Yes.
takes away some things, perhaps it confirms other things, which is why we need to, perhaps starting from the notion that parents have a very plenary set of rights vis-a-vis their children, we need to know what he lost.
Yes. I agree with that. And Illinois law says the presumption is that you retain them unless you lose them in the decree. So looking at the decree, she does have custody, and what Illinois law says that means is that she has the right to determine education except as otherwise agreed. This is Section 608 of the Illinois statutes. It says except as otherwise agreed, so you have to look at the agreement to see exactly where that line falls, just as you say, Judge Wood, and that the decree here contemplates his intimate involvement. The mother may have a veto right if there's some things that he's doing that she doesn't like, but there's absolutely no evidence of that on the pleadings in this case. So as you say, she has the sole education, but he has the right to establish mutually acceptable guidelines and standards. He has some financial obligations under the decree for their education. He has a right to inspect educational records, receive notice from the school of all issues concerning the children, their grades, their progress, and of all meetings and activities open to parents. And that's what we've alleged that the defendants have deprived and what the divorce decree does not deprive Mr. Crowley of.
Is there any evidence in this record that Mr. Crowley has been so disruptive that the school needs to exclude him from its grounds?
No, Your Honor, not on the pleadings. We're at the pleadings in this case, and what we've simply alleged is that, and I know that the defendants would like you to believe that this is a case where Mr. Crowley is trying to get total control and total access to the school, but that is simply not the case. That's not what Mr. Crowley has pled. This is a case where he's alleged that they totally and systematically cut off his ability to participate in the educational life of his children.
Did he show them they were aware that the wife had custody.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did he show them the divorce decree?
The pleadings don't reveal whether that happened or not. But under Illinois law, the presumption is that he retains those rights unless the divorce decree cuts them off. And it's very specific.
Wouldn't the school be entitled to demand a copy of the decree?
Absolutely. Absolutely, if they were interested. But as I say, Illinois law, the presumption is that he retains those rights, particularly in the school records context. It says if the parent asks for records, they both have to get records unless the decree specifically cuts that right off. And that hasn't happened in this case. Nor is there any evidence that the mother of these children objects in any way to his involvement.
Well, it's pretty obvious that she does. You say it's on the pleadings, but if the mother was cooperating here with the divorced dad, there wouldn't even be a case here, would there?
Well, with respect, Your Honor, we're happy to go back and look at that issue with more discovery, but you can't say from these pleadings that his rights are incompatible. There's nothing more on the record in this case about what's happened since, but my understanding from talking to Mr. Crowley is that he still continues not to get these documents, but he does continue to have a good relationship with the mother, and in fact he has sole control of the children this very week, although he's not allowed to go into the school or participate in any way in those issues.
Isn't it equally likely that she just doesn't want to be bothered with photocopying, mailing lots of school records to him?
That very well could be, and I think on the pleadings you have to draw all the inferences in favor of Mr. Crowley. As the divorce decree says, that's not her obligation.
Is your conception of his constitutional right, forgetting what rights he might have under state law, and what he might have retained in the divorce decree, what is the Constitution? You cite cases that seem to me, like Pierce and Meyer and Yoder, that are extremely remote, to say the least. So do you have anything more, closer?
Well, I think the Navin case from this court
is... No, that's not a constitutional case, is it?
But it explores what state rights...
No, it's an IEA, whatever that is, the IDEA case. So where's a case, because we do have an immunity issue here, where's a case which says that the constitutional right of parents, not merely a right, to not to put them in school for religious reasons or to put them in a private school or something like that or to study German or what have you, but it is actually the right of a non-custodial parent to participate in the way that Cowley wants, demand records and so on and so forth. Where's a case that says that? Because what's a concern here, of course, is that it's difficult for schools dealing with these broken families, and if the Constitution is going to have kind of extremely vague and broad contours entitling non-custodial parents to all sorts of rights, and they get into squabbles with the other spouse and so on, that seems to me problematic. So I wondered if you had any cases which had gone down this road.
Well, I understand that concern, and I understand the position that the school is in, but our position is that this is a very unusual case where he's been totally deprived.
Don't give me the unusual case business.
Okay. And as far as the rights, Your Honor, both the Stanley case from the U.S. Supreme Court and the Franz case from the D.C. Circuit apply the principle that rights are retained to non-custodial parents. The Franz case specifically examines precedents. I beg your pardon?
What rights? Sure, some rights are retained, you know, like the right to see the child if you're, you know, if you're not an unfit person or something like that. I mean, obviously, it's things like that. You are a parent. The divorce doesn't sever the parental relation, and that certainly implies some rights. That's fine. But what about the right to get involved in the child's education? Is there a case about that?
Well, in Franz and in Stanley, the rights were cut off entirely, which is what we're alleging in this case.
Yes, I know. Cutting off the right... Well, what would it mean, the rights entirely? Crowley hasn't been cut off from seeing the child and, you know, having these visits and so on. My question is, do you have a case which says that the non-custodial parent has a federal constitutional right to, you know, be involved in the student's education?
Well, Your Honor, no. There is no case that specifically says, as far as non-custodial parents and education, that conceptualizes it as a federal right. But as you point out, the genesis is from state law.
Maybe there's a reason for that, that there isn't any good reason to have the federal courts involved in issues of this sort, like, you know, choice of school. What if the wife places the child in a school that the husband doesn't like?
Well, Your Honor, they have an agreement in the decree to establish mutually acceptable.
They have an agreement. There are state rights and all that stuff. My question is: suppose she puts these children in a school that he disapproves of. What is his constitutional right to object to or intervene, participate in that decision? Constitutional right.
Yes, sir. I understand. None of these cases suggest that just because his rights have been diminished.
What's your view? I've given you a case.
Yes, sir.
All right. Does he have a constitutional right to object, be heard, participate, intervene in some way in her decision, custodial parent's decision, to put the child in a different school?
Yes, I think he has a right both under federal and under state law
in that circumstance. Forget the state law. I'm talking about the Constitution. So where's the end of it? Where's the end of this?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think, though, that... I think that the Constitution needs to be reserved for...
What if the mother says, I don't... All right, so they've agreed on the school. The mother says, I don't want this child playing football. And the father says, no, that you're going to stunt his social development if you don't allow him to play football. So does he have a constitutional right to some kind of intervention in the school to say, you know, you've got to make a judgment about this football issue between us?
No, Your Honor, I would say that he doesn't.
The divorce decree addresses these conflicts between mother and father.
Yes, Judge Wood.
And it strikes me that you don't need, I mean, what you're trying to talk about is a wholesale cutting off of his role as father.
Yes,
by
ma'am.
The school. He's not the kid's father anymore as far as the school is concerned.
That's correct.
He's saying that's wrong. On the other hand, conflicts between mother and father are the business of the state courts, just as was the case in Newdow, just as is in the case of all other things. All of that garbage is not constitutionalized. It needs to be worked out by the state courts. You don't have to make everything a constitutional issue.
I would agree with that. And I think also that if you look at really what we're complaining about here is the cutting off of his rights to participate in his children's education. It's not a battle between the mother and the father.
Why is that a federal constitutional right?
Because Meyer
and
Pierce...
To see your child, yes, to visit your child and so on. That I understand. But
well, and also why, with...
Meyer seems to me... I thought Meyer and Pierce were pretty discredited cases anyway, but Meyer seems to me extremely remote from this case. I mean... You can't ignore the fact that we have a divorce situation, we have a custodial parent, and we have tremendous potential for conflict and uncertainty if we say the non-custodial parent has a constitutional right to participate in the education of the child.
But again, Your Honor, this is not a case where the children's mother, there's any evidence that she disagrees in any way with what's going on. I think Judge Wood said it very well. If there's a dispute between the parents, that's one thing. But here the school is cutting off.
You didn't agree with that. You didn't agree with that. You said that if they had a disagreement over what school the child would go to, the father would have a federal constitutional right to be heard by the school with regard to that issue.
I should retract that. I think that was erroneous. But I do think that where you're dealing with the rights of the father versus to participate in the children's education, where the mother, there's no evidence that the mother objects, and the school is cutting off his rights where the state hasn't, where she hasn't, then there's a constitutional issue where they've been cut off altogether. Again, I think this is a very unusual case, and I do think that Meyer and Pierce are relevant. Glucksberg, all the way up to 97, the Supreme Court has recognized the parent's right to be involved in the children's education. So I think it's a very narrow right, Your Honor, but I wouldn't say it's been discredited entirely. And I do
think that there's a general constitutional right for parents to be involved in their children's education. Suppose, forget about divorce, intact family. Suppose the child gets an F on an exam. Do you think the parents have a federal constitutional right to challenge that?
No, Your Honor, and there is a case from this circuit about that.
It's an unfair exam. It's stunting the intellectual development of our children.
Your Honor, I think the federal court's intervention should be reserved for the most extreme cases where the rights are being cut off altogether.
Aren't there cases that deal with generally the right of the state to terminate parental relationships? There are due process requirements if somebody's going to be declared unfit. There are cases that deal with the broad question of the existence or non-existence of a parental relationship between an adult and a child. It extends to the illegitimacy cases. It extends to the unfitness cases. And right at the moment, I thought Mr. Crowley was saying, right now, the state, in the form of this particular school district, is making me a non-father.
Yes, ma'am.
Whatever parents have, I should have until the divorce decree or something intervenes.
That is absolutely his position.
No, you wouldn't go that far. You would say he has every right that a custodial parent has. Well, every constitutional right, but they're not terminating his parental status.
Exactly, Your Honor. An award of custody is not the same thing as a termination of parental rights. That would be our position. And just to finish answering Your Honor's question from earlier about Meyer and Pierce, given that he has a right to make, in cooperation with the mother, decisions on the educational standards, how can he hope to do that, is Mr. Crowley's question, with no information whatsoever from the school. So it really is fundamental that he get this information.
Why doesn't he ask his wife?
She doesn't have an obligation to provide it to him, Your Honor.
Why doesn't he ask her?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Are they amicable?
It's my understanding that they are.
Then why doesn't that they are or not?
That they are. Yes, sir.
Why doesn't he ask her for the information? Why isn't there some conception of exhaustion of remedies here? Before you hassle the school, you try to see, you know, get as much as you can from the other spouse.
Well, Your Honor, he did try to exhaust his remedies, and some of these things are things that the mother of the children, his ex-wife, cannot provide him, like attendance at parent-teacher conferences, for example. So it's just the educational records. There are a lot of these things that the mother cannot provide, and he did. If Your Honor believes there is a concept,
what do you mean by that? You mean if the mother, there's a parent-teacher conference and the mother wanted the father to come along, school would object to that? That was nonsense.
Well, Your Honor, the evidence in this case is that they did object, and there's no evidence.
No, they didn't object to him coming with her to something.
Well, there's nothing on the pleadings to suggest either way on that, and taking all the facts and assuming them in the favor of Mr. Crowley, there's nothing to suggest that the school would have let him come if she had said let him come. But I think this goes directly to Mr. Crowley's First Amendment claim, which doesn't necessarily depend on whether he has a fundamental constitutional right or not. He did try to exhaust his remedies by going to the principal, going to the superintendent, and going to the school board and saying, I'm entitled to this information under whatever law, under state law, under federal law, and they ignored him. It's been pled what he asked them about, and the speech was on a matter of potential public interest, which is all you have to show in order to overcome judgment on the pleadings. He talked about criticizing the school, the district, and the leadership of the principal and the superintendent at board meetings, criticizing the academic performance of the school, lack of supervision of students, and other safety concerns, and he's pled that the cutting off of his rights was in retaliation for that. So, Your Honor, with respect, I believe he has made a diligent effort to exhaust his remedies, and it's my understanding that despite that, 5 years later, he's still not having any involvement with the education of his children.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Busby. And we have from Mr. Duarte.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the primary problem with the amicus and the plaintiff's position is that they have conflated or confused the limited fundamental right under the 14th Amendment in the care, custody, and control of a child with this more colloquial, popular idea of a right to be involved in the education of a child.
But, you know, the problem with your position that I have is that the divorce decree does, of course, limit to a certain degree one or both parents in any, I'm speaking sort of in the abstract, and in this case as well, one or both parents' particular rights. But it only limits. I mean, the background rule is that a child still has two parents. And, of course, as a society, we have no interest whatsoever in isolating and completely cutting off one of the parents from all aspects of the child's upbringing. And so it seems to me that what the school is doing is perverse at best, given the fact that more than 50% of marriages in this country end in divorce, and there are vast numbers of children in, as it were, broken families. So I don't know why the school district is taking such a tough attitude, and I also am very disturbed at, on the pleadings, without any evidence on this record to show that Mr. Crowley was being obnoxious and Mr. Crowley wasn't cooperating, that Mr. Crowley needed in some fashion to have a lesser set of rights than other fathers, I don't see where we can see that the school district can treat him as a non-parent.
Well, Your
Honor,
now,
maybe he is a parent for purposes of his, you know, week with the kids or whatever, but as far as the school district is concerned, he's a non-parent. He's a stranger adult who they don't have to let into the building.
Right, I disagree with the characterization that the school is treating the plaintiff as a non-parent. The school has not done anything.
Why aren't they sending him the records then? Why aren't they letting him participate in Christmas programs?
Well, Judge, I think the way to respond to that is to answer that that conduct does not deprive him of his constitutional rights.
Well, I'm asking you, why are they not letting him get the information that a father would get? Why are they treating him like a random person on the street to whom, of course, you would not send grade records, attendance records, other kinds of records?
Well, with respect to the access to the school, Your Honor, there is evidence in the record.
What about the pieces of paper? He's not endangering anybody to get pieces of paper. He's sitting in his home opening the mail.
Yes, Your Honor, but
your brief does not address that at all,
as far as Your Honor, I'm concerned. There is a lack of clarity with respect to his allegations with respect to the documents. The allegation is really that the principal has not guaranteed his receipt of all documents.
He's saying he hasn't gotten any documents. This is on the pleadings. File your summary judgment motion. Introduce your evidence. He's saying he's not getting the records.
Your Honor, under paragraph 38 of the plaintiff's complaint, he alleges plaintiff still does not receive all of the
items.
Where
are you looking? Do we have it? Just in the exhibit?
The complaint.
Where is that?
The complaint is attached as Exhibit 2 to the appellant's brief, Your Honor.
Plaintiff's requests have never been granted, and plaintiff still does not receive all of the items to which he is entitled.
Yes. Wait,
this is page 8 of this thing. He filed.
Paragraph 38.
Paragraph 37, this is his complaint, as I understand it, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find it.
And, yeah, the complaint begins at kind of exhibit number two here. Paragraph 37 says he was explicit in his demands for all of these documents. He gives them these 100 self-addressed stamped self-addressed envelopes. It doesn't say stamped. His requests have never been granted.
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at paragraph, start at paragraph 36, he gives envelopes to teachers and the principal, and he asks all of them to mail him documents. And the next, and then paragraph 38, he says he does not receive all of them. This is an allegation that McKinney, the principal, has not somehow guaranteed that the teachers are sending plaintiff the documents that he specifically requested from them one-on-one.
Well, I think you're reading this way too unfairly. Reading this in the light most favorable to the party opposing the 12C motion, which is our obligation at this point, he is alleging back in paragraph 23 that he is to have access to his children's educational records and is to receive duplicate notice of all records, events, issues concerning the children, notice of meetings, and so forth and so on. That is the predicate that leads up to this paragraph 38. Well, I don't understand at this stage of the proceedings why we don't have to read that in the light sympathetic to him.
Well, Your Honor, if we accept then that the school did not provide him with any documents, did not provide him with any mailings, that still doesn't mean that the school violated his fundamental constitutional rights. The two are not commensurate. There is a whole
body. So your position is that any school in the state of Illinois where there's a divorce and the school thinks, without ever looking at the divorce decree, that parent A has custody of the child, the school can lock the door, forbid parent B from ever coming in, forbid parent B from looking at any piece of paper, and in all ways shut off parent B without knowing anything from participation in the education of the child. That's an amazing claim.
Well, Your Honor, I think that barring a parent from school grounds and not providing parents with documents does not rise to the level of a constitutional violation. And that's what's at issue in this case. There is no substantive due process violation based upon those acts by the school. And the issue here is that the 14th Amendment does not give a plaintiff the right, does not give the plaintiff, a parent, a voice or a veto power over how a school is going to be administered. And there's a whole body of case law, in fact, some that specifically address the issue of access to school grounds, which were cited in the brief. Specifically,
this is going to come as very bad news to everybody who's divorced, I have to tell you. The thought that you can have no participation whatsoever in your child's education, the fact that perhaps you can also have no participation whatsoever in your child's medical care, perhaps no participation whatsoever in your child's religious or social upbringing, even if a divorce decree doesn't take that away from you.
Well, Your Honor, there may
just
be
on the basis of the unsupported assumptions of school districts.
Well, Your Honor, there may be a basis in some state law. There may be a federal statute that a parent
but
can use to
vindicate. But what about Stanley against Georgia? Illegitimate fathers have greater rights than you're, according to Mr. Crowley.
Well, Judge, under the Supreme Court, under the law of the Supreme Court, as most recently elucidated in Troxell, the right of care, custody, and control of a child is very limited.
You cite the dissent in Troxell. I thought that was a little unpersuasive.
Well, Judge, actually, that brings up a point. First of all, I was incorrect in that I attributed to Justice Scalia. It should have been Justice Scalia. It should have been Justice Kennedy. But it also, in the concurrence by Justice Souter, that the boundaries of these rights have never been clearly set forth. And, in fact, the main opinion, it's clear that what the court takes away from cases like Pierce and Meyer and Wisconsin versus Yoder is this generalized formulation of a right of a parent to make certain basic decisions. Is my child going to go to a private school? Is my child going to go to a public school?
Right,
is my
and
child
any
be
of
educated?
Those decisions, I'm absolutely with you that if there is a conflict between the parents, it's no business of the federal courts, it's not a constitutional issue, the state courts are there and quite competent to work that out. That's not this case. On these pleadings.
Your Honor, I agree that that's not the issue. Isn't the conflict between the parents. The issue is what is the scope of the fundamental rights. And the scope of the fundamental rights, as elaborated in those cases, is very limited. And there's a whole bunch of other cases at the circuit court and district court levels across the nation addressing issues like parents trying to exempt their children from parts of the curriculum that they objected to, parents trying to exempt their children.
Suppose that his wife said to these, maybe this is going outside the record or don't know, but if the mother said to the school, you know, wrote a note to the principal saying, please let my husband, husband is concerned about the child being beaten up and so on, please give him, you know, maximum permissible access to the school and so on. Does the school have any policy about things of that sort?
I don't know, based on these facts, what the school's regulations would be with respect to that issue, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Is that it?
I'd just like to address briefly the equal protection argument, going back to the evidence of disruption, evidence in the record of disruption by the plaintiff. If you turn to paragraphs 38 through 44 of the complaint, which is really the first incident that he complains about.
Your argument that the hundred self-addressed envelopes suggests disruption, is that your point? He's pleading himself out of court?
No, this had nothing to do with the 100 envelopes, Judge. This is with a specific instance where plaintiff, as alleged, entered the school playground during the school day in violation of the rules. Your Honor, I see that a lot of times they could just continue with this.
Your brief is perfunctory with regard to the First Amendment claim. So what do we do with the situation? Obviously, his main concern in criticizing the school authorities is with his child, so that's a personal dispute. But he says in his complaint that he was that before all of this concern about his child, he was criticizing the Hiawatha School. And so couldn't you have both a personal gripe but also a larger concern with management of the school that was a matter of public interest, which obviously would be?
I think in the abstract you could, Judge, but I think based on the allegations here, what you have is private speech that, you know, takes the form of
matters. Well, I don't understand, because if you look at the complaint, so you have a paragraph there somewhere, which I've lost, about how before all this brewed up. Yes, it says in this 25, paragraph 20, in the years leading up to the acts complained of in this complaint, plaintiff had been at times openly critical of Hiawatha School. Now, at public meetings. Okay, so if he makes public denunciations of the school before he's concerned about his child, this, in turn, both it sounds like a First Amendment claim, but also it could also suggest that their later hostility to him was retaliatory.
Well, Judge, if that was the only allegation in that respect, then I would be more inclined to agree with you.
Well, is there something that contradicts it?
Well, I think paragraph 26, a subsequent paragraph, refines exactly what his speech was about, and that relates
but
to...
But it says has also.
Right. It says has also. So he also suggests, you know, this is something in addition. There's the public criticism and the private criticism.
I think what we take away from the complaint, Judge, is that plaintiff's issues with the school have to do with the issues that affect his children there. His son being bullied, this issue of whether he gets documents relating to his children, and the academic performance of the school as it relates to their attendance there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Duarte.
You.
Mr. Busby, how much time does he have? Well, you can have a minute. Well, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute. So let me ask you, is Crowley seeking injunctive relief also, or just damages?
It's my understanding that he's just seeking damages, Your Honor. If we were his counsel below, or if we go back, I would advise him to amend.
Has this problem been resolved? It just lies. Because if he was asking for injunctive relief, that would dissolve the immunity issue.
Yes, sir, but it's my understanding that the problem has not been resolved.
Then why isn't he seeking injunctive relief?
I don't know, Your Honor.
This is pro se.
It's his pro se complaint we're looking at, isn't it?
Well, he did have a lawyer in the district court, Judge Wood, so it's the complaint that was filed by that lawyer. Then
so
he was pro se on appeal.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
sir.
Why, so I don't
well,
understand.
It says, and such other further general relief. What is?
Why wouldn't he want an injunction? Indeed, why wouldn't he want a, you know, restraining or temporary restraining order, preliminary injunction?
I would advise him to amend his complaint to seek that on remand, Your Honor, if the case is remanded, to either
Isn't
seek declaratory or injunctive relief.
From the complaint that he and his ex-spouse are on the outs.
I don't
because
believe
if she said to the school, look, you know, my ex-husband has a serious concern about the child, and maybe I don't think it's as serious as he does, but that's his concern, and, you know, given the divorce decree and the reservation that Judge Wood stressed, reservation of rights to the records and so on, I think you should, or I have no objection to your letting him, you know, observe at the playground and so on. Why wouldn't that be the natural course to follow?
Well, Your Honor,
dissolve this case without litigation.
I think we have to go back and have some fact finding in this case to find out if anything like that has occurred or what the school's response to it is.
Sense. We can't, like Judge Evans suggests. I mean, it seems. I mean, common sense says that.
I'm not
if
so
you have,
sure.
If you're invited to a parent-teacher conference, you could bring someone else with you, and they're not going to have someone at the door checking parental status, right?
Well, there's no evidence.
Right? I mean, what do you think?
Well, he doesn't even get the information about the conferences, Your Honor.
No, I understand, but if she wanted to bring him to the parent-teacher conference, you're not suggesting, are you, that the school would forbid that?
I really don't. Honestly, Your Honor, I don't think we know the answer to that. Given what we've pled about the school acting with animus and arbitrarily, I don't think we know the answer to that. If you take all the facts in favor of Mr. Crowley, as you must, on the pleadings, I think...
We have to take all the facts in his favor within limits, of course. And if you look at the complaint, that 100 self-addressed envelopes, pretty goofy. What are the teachers supposed to do when they get the self-addressed envelope?
Well, Your Honor, we wouldn't expect the teachers to go out on their own and provide documents if the principal tells them not to.
No, forget that. You're a teacher and you get a self-addressed envelope. What on earth do you do with it? What do you put in it?
Well, the records that he's requesting, notices of parent-teacher conferences. I mean, he has a right not only...
You know what, every teacher is supposed to gather records? The teacher is not going to have a schedule of everything with him or her, so what is the teacher supposed to do?
Well, if it's not the teacher's responsibility...
And send him 100 letters, all with the same stuff in it?
If it's not the teacher's responsibility, they could certainly pass the letters off to whoever in the school that does have the responsibility for mailing those items to Mr. Crowley.
But teachers send individual notes home all the time about conferences, about programs they're having, about school events. Kids' backpacks are stuffed with them.
Yes, Your Honor, and those are the things that Mr. Crowley says he's not getting in this case. Judge Posner, just to address one last thing about the substantive due process right we assert in this case, I do want to be clear that the right we're asserting is not an absolute right. All we're saying is that he does have some right.
It's just the opening. It's the entering wedge.
Well, I understand your concern. We're not...
Because after all, you seem to think one of the constitutional rights is... To put in the envelope, whatever, you put an envelope to someone else?
No, Your Honor, and I think that's what distinguishes the Lovern and the Mejia cases that the other side cites from what we're saying. In those cases, there was some deprivation. In the Lovern case, those were school access cases, but they weren't so draconian as this, Your Honor. Other avenues of participation and communication were left open in those cases. And also, those cases were decided only after summary judgment on facts that weren't present here. One was an indecent exposure case, for example, and then the other one, the person had threatened the members, the father had threatened the members of the school. This case is more like Navin and like Meyer and
okay,
Pierce.
We've been through that. Thank you very much. Mr.
Thank
Bundy.
You.
And also, so we asked you to be amicus curiae, didn't we?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, thank you. Well, we thank you for your excellent efforts on behalf of your...
Thank you.
Okay, our last case for argument is